For me, I would say in all reality, it's the owner. And because I believe that the owner has the responsibility and also the creates the atmosphere that's required to do that. And so the cadence of a $10 million store is quite a bit more than a $1 million store. And so there's a lot of things that have to happen to make that work. One would be, obviously, the website needs to convert at a high level. They're more focused on the ones that fail or the ones that struggle is they're more focused on sales than they are on the customer experience and making sure that the follow through is done correctly. And so I would say, yeah, the biggest difference is one is front end focused. The very successful ones are more back end focused. Mobile for sure. The majority of traffic now, over 80%, is mobile. And I say that with one caveat. We certainly have some very high average order value clients that is in the $2,000-$3,000 range per product. And so they certainly convert higher on desktop because it takes more education.
So on today's episode, we take you through the entire e-commerce funnel and we tell you how to optimize every single step. It's a great episode you don't want to miss, so do stay tuned.
This is the 2X e-commerce podcast, hosted by Kunle Campbell.
So warm welcome to the 2X e-commerce podcast. This is episode 27 in season 9. We've been going on since 2014. I'm so proud of what we've done so far. It wouldn't have been possible without you listeners, my 2Xers. So just loving this journey thus far. Now, if you haven't already, please hit the follow button on any of the podcasting applications you use to listen to this cast. It would really help us reach more people, number one. And two, it would help us get even more interesting guests on this podcast. That's my only ask from you. If you can, just take a few seconds to hit that follow button and I would very much appreciate it. On today's episode, I interviewed Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford is the managing director and CEO of a company called Build, Grow, Scale. It's a hybrid of an agency model, which offers conversion rate optimization or CRO services, as well as owns a number of in-house e-commerce brands. Today, he's going to share his expertise on how to essentially apply best practices to every step in your e-commerce funnel. So when we talk about the e-commerce funnel, we start at the very nitty-gritty at the checkout, add to cart, product pages, collection pages, and then your homepage. We talk about the entire step and how he views just optimizing and mistakes, most especially a lot of the time when you're trying to figure out what to do, the first thing you need to figure out is what not to do. So we talk a lot about what not to do. Another thing, before COVID-19, Matthew hosted BGS, which is Build, Grow, Scale, which was the largest yearly e-commerce focused event in North America. He knows a thing or two around conversion rate optimization, analytics, and business intelligence in general. So if you want to essentially figure out how to structure your pages, how to increase conversion rates across the board, he talks about metrics at each stage. What percentage of traffic should move from your homepage to your product page? What percentage of traffic should move? What's the benchmark percentage of people or shoppers to move from your product page to add to cart and then to initiate checkouts and then conversions. If you want to figure out or know or learn these key metrics as well as what to do to improve them, you've got to pay attention. You've got to listen and enjoy this episode. So I'm going to leave you now to enjoy this episode. Again, I'm always open on LinkedIn. So if you want to connect with me, give me feedback, you want to listen to somebody, you have a tip, you want to tell me a secret, I'm all ears. Hook me up on LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn. hit the follow, or in fact, just hit connect, send me a message. Let's have some conversations and just do the best to 2X your stores and enjoy. So I should leave you now to enjoy this episode, and cheers. Hey, Matthew, welcome to the 2X e-commerce podcast.
Howdy, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm going to just jump right straight in. What, in your opinion, is the difference between a $1 million e-commerce business and a $10 million e-commerce business?
For me, I would say in all reality, it's the owner. And because I believe that the owner has the responsibility and also creates the atmosphere that's required to do that. And so the cadence of a $10 million store is quite a bit more than a $1 million store. And so there's a lot of things that have to happen to make that work. One would be, obviously, the website needs to convert at a high level, which is the area that we take care of. You need to have very good tracking so that your data is correct. We always say garbage in, garbage out. And if your data is not clean, you're making decisions from false pretenses. And yeah, I would say it's a myriad of things that you would have to graduate through in order to go from that 1 million to 10 million. But it can happen quite quickly.
So what routines what habits distinguish or separate a $1 million e-commerce owner from a $10 million e-commerce owner?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say, for one, they're very good at delegating, and not just delegating, but establishing accountability. Because if you just pass it off and don't have the details that you need, I've seen it and witnessed it where the store is actually very successful, but the business struggles. And that is because of the systems and processes that are in place don't handle the cadence of volume. A lot of times where I see that the most is around customer support. So they're more focused on the ones that fail or the ones that struggle. They're more focused on sales than they are on the customer experience and making sure that the follow through is done correctly. And so I would say, yeah, the biggest difference is one is front end focused. The very successful ones are more back end focused. Hmm.
Should a store doing $1 million or less focus on conversion rate optimization?
Yes. Yeah, I would say the people or the experience that we've had helping hundreds of them get over that $1 million mark and tens, I would say, I think we're probably close to 30 or 40 hitting the $10 million mark. The difference is where we see the hockey stick growth is when they're doing that 100 to 250,000 a month. So they know they have a good product. They know they have an audience, but their store isn't optimized. And when they optimize their store, that gives them the ability to scale very fast. And we've taken several of them from that 200 grand a month to $1 million a month in 3 to 4 months. Yeah, I think that's the smaller the store is, the more valuable it is. The larger your store gets, you tend to have a lot of repeat customers. You have an audience. The traffic tends to convert a little bit better just because of the brand awareness.
So talk me through a business doing 100K and using CRO to get to 500K or more. What would they typically not have done that when they do from a CRO perspective, because you're a CRO expert.
Yeah.
What would they do from a CRO perspective? What would they not have done to change to really get that hockey stick growth you alluded to earlier?
Yeah. So a lot of times they're still using a stock theme or it's been a bunch of me too. They've seen a YouTube video that said do this or do that. And so they've made a few changes. Two things. One, they need to get their Google Analytics and Tag Manager set up correctly so that they're not guessing or using their gut I think this will work, and then changing a bunch of stuff and not knowing what's really creating the win or the loss. And then once you have your data correct, as you and I were discussing earlier, we always start at the back of the store first, because if your checkout is broken or your checkout's not optimized, that's the very quickest way to generate more revenue. And so if it's converting at 1% or 2%, and we can flip that switch so that it's converting 20, 30% better, then all of a sudden you now have more money to spend in order to get the systems and things in place. And so then we would go from there to the cart. We'd make sure that the cart is optimally converting. And we have a bunch of metrics just from our best practices from the years of doing it. So your cart should be no less than 50% of people who add to cart make it into the proceed to checkout. And then the completed sale should be no less than 50% of the people that made it into proceed to checkout from the cart. And if those numbers aren't true, then we know that there's quite a bit of optimization that can be done there. And then from there, we would go back to the product page. So each page has a specific purpose. The product page is where you would do the selling of the product. They would have really good detailed descriptions, maybe even the materials used, et cetera. It would be presented in a way where people can skim it rather than a wall of text. And then we typically believe one really good testimonial anywhere near the product title or even in maybe in a tab under the description is good. We also definitely believe in tabs, because if you present all your information and they have to scan through it to find what they're looking for, we know that hurts conversion. So breaking it down into the segments and not forcing everyone to go through everything to get their questions answered will help the product page convert much higher. The other thing I would say is on that product page, you need to have a hierarchy of focus. And so what that means is your button colors stand out from your theme. They don't match your theme. You want them when they come and they land on that page, they know that the very next most important action is add to cart. And when they do that, then the next most important action on the cart will be proceed to checkout and so on. And so then from there, we know for a fact that the product page converts much better when there's a filter in front of it. And we call that a category page. So when you have a bunch of different products, if they can filter it closer to what they're looking for before they land on the product page, they convert 3 to 5 times higher. And so a lot of times landing them on a product page is actually not the best thing, because you're assuming that would be the product that they want rather than letting them see a list of categories or a list of the products and then select from there. So the category page is basically a filter. That's all it is. It takes all the selections, and the easier that you make it, like Best Buy, they have thousands of products, but you can use the filter down the left side and narrow it down to the top 2 or 3 that you're looking for very quickly. And so we mimic a filter page just like that. And then the homepage, the purpose of that is, did I land on the right site? Do they sell what I'm looking for? And then easy navigation. So the longer they stay on your homepage, the lower they convert. And a lot of people try to sell on their homepage. You'll see add to cart or quick add or quick view, all these different things. Every one of those actually hurts conversions. There's no way that they can add to cart. Say your average order value is $140, $150. They don't have enough information at that point to make a decision of whether it's worth $150. Is it a good quality product? Do I know or trust you? And so all of those things actually lower conversions and create more clicks, which creates less sales.
Okay. There's a lot to unpack from there. First, I think you explained that the way traffic actually filters through. So it says, say 100 people have added to cart. Your expectation is that 50 of them will eventually be initiated to checkout, and then another 25 of them will make it to checkout, yeah. Which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Okay. And if it's less than that, then we know that there's optimization that can be done in those steps.
Okay, just looking at a product page, right? Where do you optimize first, desktop or mobile?
Mobile for sure. The majority of traffic now, over 80%, is mobile. And I say that with one caveat. We certainly have some very high average order value clients that is in the $2,000-$3,000 range per product. And so they certainly convert higher on desktop because it takes more education. And so with those particular ones, they certainly pique their interest on mobile, and then we retarget them back to desktop in order to increase the conversions from the traffic. But yeah, we would always optimize the mobile experience first. And we consider mobile a totally different experience than desktop. So you want to maximize the real estate that you have on desktop to convert. So it means that you have some other things that you can do there that you can't do on mobile.
You spoke about the importance of like data, processing the right data initially before you take any action. So how do you view mobile data? Is that another sort of silo from an analysis standpoint, or do you aggregate the data points and just get that assessment? Do your assessments sort of break out into this is mobile, this is what desktop looks like?
Yeah, the data is totally separate. So we do not mix it together. And we consider tablets as well to be similar to the desktop experience. So mobile is its own, and then tablets and desktop. And tablets and desktop in general should convert about twice as high as your mobile does. So if you have an average order, you know, or average of 4%, 5%, it may be 6.5 on desktop and 3 on mobile. If there's a bigger disparagement than that, then we go look because we figure something's broken on one of the two different experiences, and we'll check. It could just be as much as it's not displaying great on Apple devices, and because so many buyers are on Apple, we know that we'll check screen resolutions and that stuff right away, and that alone can make your mobile convert much better just by getting those things correct.
Okay, so for platforms such as Shopify, where they're very limited, so parameters or limited things you can do, changes you can make to checkout, how do you optimize checkouts on a platform like Shopify?
Yeah, we know, obviously, a bunch of our stores use Plus, so then we get access to Liquid Code. But the other thing is, there's other changes that you can do right in the form fields, as far as how you display the header, thank you page, things that you can do. All of those are important and are very well thought out. And I'll give you an example. Actually, I'll give you two examples that any of your users can use, and they will automatically, like it's never not worked, they will automatically see an increase. So where you ask for their email, obviously we track form field errors. And so we tested text in there. And so under the email section, rather than just say email, we say email required for order confirmation. And the reason why we do that, I was reading a book called Biology, and they basically said, people don't mind giving you information if you give them a reason why. And they use the example of cutting in line. And so if you say, hey, can I cut in line? 80% of the people said no, 20% allowed them to. And then they said, hey, do you mind if I cut in line? My kids are late for school and they need to hurry up. Then it was the opposite. 80% said yes and 20% said no. So same request, just one had a reason, the other one didn't. And it totally flipped the equation. And we found that to be true too. And so we've tried all different texts in there and we've never been able to beat required for order confirmation. And if you think about it, of all the emails sent for any purpose, order confirmation averages over 80% open rate. So it's the most opened email ever. And so by telling them, hey, we need your email for order confirmation, we tend to get a much better email. And no, it reduced our number of errors by hundreds of percent. It was crazy. And so by doing that, you also have their best email for abandoned cart recovery and retargeting and all the rest of the stuff that goes along with that. So that one thing right there will certainly make you more money. And also everyone knows SMS is the most valuable form of recovery right now too. It's the most opened of any type of notification. And in the phone field, we don't say it's optional. We don't leave it unrequired. We also say required for shipping notifications. And everyone wants to be notified when their product ships. And so by doing that, those two optimizations that you can do on any checkout, whether it's a Shopify Plus or regular, or whether it's WooCommerce, BigCommerce, whatever, you can change the form field language. Those two changes will absolutely bring up your abandoned recovery, your conversion to sale, and your SMS recovery as well.
I really like that because you're really merging that form or the fear of missing out element into the form request, into data request. So they're taking an action to get a reward. So there's that cycle there, which is increasing conversions. Really good tip there. Really good tip. And now for Shopify merchants who have a lot more flexibility in checkout with access to Liquid, what changes would you make at checkout to really bolster conversions? Because you can get the same amount of traffic, but if you double conversions, it's just less effort, max reward.
Yeah, for sure. That's a really good place to, obviously we would use those same two optimizations, but then underneath where they put in their coupon code, we typically put testimonials because this is a point where they're about to exchange money with you. And so we want them to see the other happy customers, know how many you've served. And we use that as an example. We've tested a lot of different things and not much, actually nothing beats that, having 3 to 5 really good testimonials down below where it has the subtotal of their of what they're buying and how much it costs.
That's interesting. I've not seen that. And it's very worthy of testing. Good stuff.
Yeah, we
and then stepping a bit further up the funnel with add to cart, what mistakes are merchants making with their add to cart experience?
Yeah, so we see people putting in all kinds of upsells in their cart, and most of them don't have good data to track it. So all they do is they see that the app says, oh, your average order value went from 140 to 160. And they think, oh, great, I have an extra $20 per client. What they don't realize is, especially if the upsell is not super congruent and they can't just go, yes, I want that and add it. If they have to go, they have to leave the cart, go look at the product to see the details about it before they can add it. It actually lowers their conversion. So yes, their average order value goes up, but they have less customers. And it's amazing how many very smart business owners don't actually realize and can't track the loss of additional customers. They just look at the average order value going up and think that they've automatically won, and that's not true. So I would say that when you're offering upsells in the cart, it's extremely important that it's a no-brainer. So if you're buying a device, a really good in-cart upsell would be a case for that device. It's very easy. You know exactly what you're getting. You don't have to leave and go figure it out. Or if you're ordering a harness, adding a seatbelt to keep your dog in the car, that would be very congruent. If you're selling a dress and you're trying to pair a pair of shoes with it, that's a terrible upsell in the cart. They have to leave and go look at the shoes and see 6 angles of them and da-da. But you see it happen all the time. And they don't realize what they're actually doing is now they're introducing a new question. Oh, do I need shoes? Oh, do I have extra money for the shoes? Oh, am I going to wear the dress if I don't have the shoes? A whole bunch of other stuff. And I always say that they've got to that stage and they don't buy. You either have an unanswered question or they don't trust you. And so those are the two things that we're looking at that point. Are we making it Homer Simpson simple? When they're in the cart, we don't want to offer them a bunch of things. We literally just want them to become a customer because our product is good. Our customer service is good. We've got those two things dialed in. We want them to become a customer and we'll sell them again and again through good marketing and relationship rather than that first time customer, them having to trust us for everything.
True. It's a good point. Good point there, the congruency, because I was going to ask, why don't they just ignore the upsell on the add to cart and move on? But with your example on the shoes and clothes, it's a distraction. It could take them down a rabbit hole and just kill that conversion and just prevent them from going to checkout. So it's a good point there. So that congruency is really important. Now, from a mobile standpoint, what's the essence? There's a lot of space restrictions on a mobile interface, as you can imagine. It's narrow, straight down the line. Several heat maps have shown that people don't typically scroll down. Where should we focus? How do you sort of stack elements? What should we know in a mobile experience?
Yeah, so by looking at the data, we are always very conscious of how much people do scroll. About 60% of them never do. So we know that. And so that makes above the fold a lot more important. And then also we're very cognizant to make sure that we don't have a false bottom. We want them to know that there is more stuff farther down if they scroll. And so we're always looking at that experience to make sure that they know there's more information below that will help them make a decision that's right for them. But for sure, above the fold is the most important. And so if in our data gathering, we see, when they scroll 75% of the page, they convert really high. Well, we go look at that page, look at what's about 3/4 of the way down, and the information that's there that's helping them make a decision is important enough that we want that above the fold, or at least to test it, getting that information above the fold. We want the page to basically convert at the same rate all the way through. And then when they get to the end, automatically it will convert a little bit better, just because the people that do that much reading and going through it, they're gathering the information that they need to make the decision. And we find that those people convert a little higher than average. But the rest of the page should convert fairly consistently all the way across.
Let's take a short pause to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back. Hey, e-commerce trailblazers, ready for a game changer in your podcast lineup? I've got just the thing, Tread Secrets, a new podcast that's all about giving you the operational edge in e-commerce. Let's cut straight to the chase. Unlike most e-commerce podcasts that dwell on marketing and growth stories, Tread Secrets dives deep into the operational heart of e-commerce. This is where the real magic happens. Why tune in? Because Tread Secrets brings you the nuts and bolts of e-commerce success. We're talking the nitty-gritty of inventory hacks, cash flow management, sales strategies, supply chain intricacies, product sourcing secrets, and the ins and outs of financing. It's the operational wisdom you need to keep your business not just running, but thriving. Hosted by Peter Beckman, CEO of Tread, this podcast is a treasure trove of insights from industry experts and successful e-commerce practitioners. It's like having a roundtable of mentors, each sharing their best-kept operational secrets. Don't let this opportunity slip through your fingers. Search for Tread Secrets on your favorite podcast app or visit tread.io/podcast. That's TREYD.io/podcast. Hit the subscribe button and stay ahead of the dynamic world of e-commerce. Remember, it's TREYD Secrets, the podcast where e-commerce operations meet success. Tune in now and transform the way you do business. You know, when you mentioned the changes, the very simple changes in checkout, which is, you know, enter your email to get your order confirmation, enter your cell phone number to get shipping updates. Those are like copywriting hacks. I don't want to say that hacks, but they're based on psychology, and it's copy. It's simple copy. It's what people are reading. It's words. Using words to get better conversions. At a PDP level, which is a product description page, how could you repeat those sort of actions to amp up conversions? I'm not talking box standard name of product. What terms do you use to pique their interest, to arouse their attention, and just get them motivated to add to cart and move, proceed?
Yeah, so we've found words matter more than anything. Those are the biggest conversion metrics. On the product page, having your add to cart button say add to cart, not proceed to checkout or not buy now, converts much better.
Why?
Because people don't want to click on stuff where they don't know where they're going.
Okay.
And they're when they're on the product page and they click add to cart, they're not ready to buy now. If you watch thousands of videos of what people do when they're interacting with the site, I would say more than 50% of them put several items in their cart. Then they go in their cart and they start looking at stuff and removing what they don't want and then finish their purchase that way. And so buy now is too soon. So entering the conversation at the point of where you're at on the page, just like in the cart, then it says proceed to checkout. It doesn't say buy now because you're not buying yet. You're proceeding to checkout. Then you're going to move to shipping. Then you're going to add your payment and then you buy. And so by stepping down those micro commitments with words makes a huge difference. The other thing that we do, and now we've done it so long and taught it so long that you actually see new themes coming out with it, but the unique value propositions underneath the add to cart. 10 years ago or 8 years ago, everybody put payment icons. Everybody knows that you accept credit cards and stuff like that. And putting those actually hurts because it makes it look old and antiquated. And it seems spammy, like the drop shippers. And underneath of there, based on your audience, we think that there's phrases that you can put there that are unique value propositions to you. Like, how fast do you ship it? What's the language that your customer uses? How fast is it? How fast is it going to leave? Just a whole bunch of different things, which are questions that are in their mind when they need to make a decision if they want to buy something.
We ran a test on a PDP and the small change we made was item ships X day, ships.
Ships within 24 hours. We've done that and it matters a lot.
That gave an uplift of 20% to cart. So it's really good. Yeah. Words matter, as you said. What about reviews? What's your take on reviews? What about placements of customer reviews and also things like Trustpilot? Is Trustpilot any good?
Yep. That. And there's several stamped and those that all mimic the reviews that Yotpo did. Basically, and this is a very good point. So you should push all of your reviews with a response. So even the negative reviews are less than 5-star. And why I say that is the testing reveals that the most clicked on reviews are 2 stars. Mm. And they are the highest converting of anything on your site. And the reason for that is people do not expect you to be perfect, but they do expect you to take care of the issues. And so they want to know when there's an issue, how is it handled? And so if you're willing to push the lower reviews and how you handled them, people actually trust you way more than if you just push your good reviews. If you've helped thousands of customers and you have all 5-star reviews, they know that you're lying and you're hiding stuff. So automatically, anything that you say has less truth to it. But if you're willing to say, hey, here's where we messed up, but we took care of it, they actually feel very good about that and convert much higher than your store average.
Yeah, it reminds me of Amazon. If you reply to an Amazon review explaining the situation, there's a lot more context and they see you're helpful. Yeah. So they know you care.
Yeah.
And it starts to play into your advantage. So speaking of like credibility, what about social selling? So there's huge buzz outside of websites and social media, TikTok, Instagram, with creators and influencers selling and with great success. So as selling channels, are you seeing any trends of bringing creator content, particularly short form video, to product pages to further reinforce credibility? Or is that just a nice to have?
We've used it in product thumbnails, the image thumbnails. Mm-hmm. You can put videos in there and the videos of a testimony or someone using it. Those have converted really well for us. The same as like when a customer does almost like it's not really an unboxing, but they're excited about it and they show how they received it. Those work really well too. So the more transparent that you are, and then obviously like we were just talking about, you pair that with you giving the honest reviews that you've got, it matters a lot. And it can make a substantial difference in the amount of add to carts that happen off that product page with those two elements done right. So you get your product images matter. That's really, we've had huge conversion boosts by changing product images, making sure that you don't just put in 8 thumbnails and 6 of them add no value. So we say don't add a thumbnail unless it actually adds value different than the other ones. Typically 4 or 5 is like the max that you would do depending on what it is. Picture of the product, a lifestyle shot, a comparison next to something so they can see the actual size, especially important for supplements. If you have a very small bottle, but they can't tell that, then when they get the bottle, they automatically feel gypped if it's small. Mm-hmm. But if you show it like in relation to someone's hand or a few other things like that, we notice that makes a huge difference. And then I would say also like an infographic work really good. And then that video. So those are the thumbnails that we always look to have.
Makes sense. Just trying to think about any other elements on a PDP, on a product page. Yeah, third-party endorsement. Are they nice to have or?
Yeah, that's why we definitely think always test like a really good review that you could put up above the product title or right where all your review stars are. And so yes, that does. And that's social proof from someone besides you, which definitely carries more weight. You can say you're the best in the world and they're not going to believe you near as much as if your customer says you're the best in the world.
What about placements of reviews? So we know that the review summary, like number of reviews should be top of fold, but what about the home or the placement, particularly in mobile, of the actual reviews shoppers read? Where would you
place them? Yeah, definitely down below so that when we make that review clickable up top, so that it automatically takes you down to the reviews. And again, like you said, on Amazon, where people can ask their questions and get answers, all of that should be included in helped conversions. So you want your reviews to actually be like a live growing thing based off of people asking questions, you responding to it. That type of review system certainly helps conversions a lot.
Okay, makes sense. So thinking about images, like the visuals of a site, what have your test or what's your take on humans, actually having humans? What's the ratio of humans to product and on the page? Is there any science to having more people in the visuals?
Not that I'm aware of. Okay. I think maybe with certain products that might be, but as a general rule of thumb, no, we think that a product shot, the product by itself, a product in a lifestyle shot. So again, so you can see the size of it, get some sort of relation to it. Infographic that breaks down the unique value of the product. And then either like a price comparison or a product comparison showing the features and benefits of yours compared to others. And again, another thing that we've tested extensively is that product comparison chart doesn't have all green on you and all red on the others, because then again, they just totally negate it. So make it a true product comparison chart. If you beat them on 3 or 4 categories, that's fine. And it's fine if you lose on 1 or 2. Hopefully you're losing on 1 or 2 that are a little more or less significant. Maybe your ship time is typically an extra day or two. That could be on there. And you could say, you're going to get this other one a little quicker. The reason why ours takes a little longer is because of XYZ. And damaging admissions can be very calculated and also be very effective to help conversions.
Makes sense. I want to wrap up with the homepage. What is one thing your homepage should communicate?
Yeah, so it's very specific. What is your unique value? Why should they do business with you? So if they've landed on your homepage, what about you is the reason why they should buy from you and not some other competitor? And then the second thing that it needs is very easy navigation to what we would call your money-making links. Most people have the menu. They try to offer everything that they can sell, and it's very confusing and it lowers conversions. So if every store has a couple of products that make 80% of their sales, those should be the navigation links. The rest could be found on the filter pages, category pages, etc. Do not use these big mega menus that create 80 choices before they even get pared down, before they get to the filter page.
Yeah, and all of this is nuanced because the experience for a single product website would be different to a website, a fashion website that has thousands or maybe hundreds of SKUs. So it's nuanced, but there's some first principles there to be had. For sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Matthew, it's been incredible. Yeah, I've learned a thing or two from this convo. For people who want to find out, and for that, I'm actually really grateful. I'm actually really grateful. I want to get your take on artificial intelligence. I've been asking this question very often. How has it changed the CRO process?
We're testing it a bunch of different ways. We're actually in the process right now. We created a GPT that's a data scientist. And we're letting it go through the GA4 data, and it can find a lot more stuff than the regular human can, because it can look at it thousands of different ways and it doesn't make mistakes. So that's one use case that we're doing right now. We've also created one that will actually do like an audit of the site. That it took us about 2 or 3 weeks of refining it to get it really good. And yeah, there's certainly ways. I don't think it's replacing jobs. I think what it's doing is it's creating super employees, and them having tools that make them better at their job and then able to check is probably where I think the first phase is. And so people really don't need to be as afraid of it as I think they are. And I think that fear keeps them from using it. And they're afraid like, oh, if I use that, then they're going to replace me. I think more true is if you use it, you become more valuable to the owner. And when jobs are on the line, you're probably going to be the one that gets to stay because you provide more value than the people that don't use it.
That's a really good point. That's a really good one. I didn't realize ChatGPT could actually analyze a website. I know it can build a website. Super interesting. Okay, good stuff. Good stuff. Interesting. And some merchants are on installing Google Analytics. What's your take on that? And the reason why is due to just performance. So they want better site speed. They think it's bloated. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so we use Tag Manager for everything. And so you can remove scripts from the site, put them up in Tag Manager, and then it only fires on the page that's opening. There's a lot of different uses for it, and it prevents you from having to guess. So the more detailed that data is, the better. And all Tag Manager is, or all Google Analytics is basically a hub for the data. What the Tag Manager does is it filters it on its way in. So then you can sort it and look at it a whole bunch of different ways. So if you don't use the Tag Manager to filter it and sort it, you basically have a whole bunch of data inside of Google Analytics, but you can't dissect it different ways in order to make very powerful assumptions about what the data is telling you.
Interesting. Very interesting. Okay, Matthew, I'm going to have to, all good things come to an end, but it's been really interesting having you on the show. For people who want to find out more about you, your website is buildgrowscale.com. That's BuildGrowScale.com. I will link to it in the show notes. Are you active on social media?
Yeah. Yep. And you can also just email me at matt@buildgrowscale.com if you have a question or interested.
We do. Are you active on any social media platforms?
Only on Facebook, LinkedIn. Those are the two main ones. I think we're on Instagram too, but not a lot.
And we'll link to your socials. Matt, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the 2X e-commerce podcast show. Thank you for sharing your tips on conversion rate optimization and scaling e-commerce businesses.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.